Thank you very much. Before I start, I'd just like to say a great thank you to Penang Kiwanis for inviting me here. For Datuk Wong, we have the same surname, but he's more distinguished than me. And the wife and also the club members, the committee members for organizing this very important workshop. I hope that all of us would get something out of this. It is specially designed so that in the afternoon, there's going to be a lot of hands-on learning about stress management. But before I go on, I also like to say a big thank you to my partner in speaking today, Dr. Lin Yong. And Dr. Lin Yong, Dr. Lin Yong is a clinical psychologist and she works in Adventist Hospital. So she's running a practice there and she's into a lot about management of mental health. Now we know that mental health is a very, very important thing in our life. When you look at human beings, basically we can divide our life into two bits, right? It's the physical health and the mental health. So once you remember that human beings, we are made of the physical and the mental, then when you talk about mental health, it's not so frightening after all, because without mental health, you are not going to be very much a human person. So really, when we talk about mental health, we are actually saying, how can we be fully human? Because we are just more than flesh and blood, okay? We have our thoughts, we have our attitudes, we have our belief system, and we have our emotions. And all those things made out of the mental part of us. So when we talk about mental health, we are really talking about how you feel, how you think, what is your will, what is your attitude, what is your belief system, and how do you behave, how do you interact with one another in this society. So once you grasp that basic concept, then you will think, wow, that is wonderful, rather than, wow, that is frightening. Isn't that so? So I'm so privileged today to be able to come together to talk to you. And I see a number of young people there. Thank you for coming. I'm not too sure whether your parents say, you have to go and see this doctor and learn about stress. Okay? And I'm really, really glad that you're here, because really stress management is one big thing that we have to learn from a very young age. We actually live in a highly stressed society, and we live in a very, very highly stressed world. So really, to be successful in life, apart from knowing how to acquire the skills in our academic pursuit and in our employments, in our jobs, and in our relationships, the other thing that is very, very important, which underpins our existence, is actually mental health. And basic to that mental health is actually stress management. So once you get the stress management right, you're just going to get all the other things right as well, like the anxiety and the depression. And once you get stress management right, you are less likely to go on to develop depression and anxiety. So that is so much for the introduction. And I just want to give you a bit of background about myself. And basically what it just says there, forget about taking a photo and it's not really important. Basically what it actually says is that the person who is standing in front of you today is a qualified mental health person, okay? I'm not a quack or something. So I have some papers, that's what it says, okay? That's that slide. And that's basically what it is. And they call us fellow. And I also have a website. After today, if there are things that you just like to know a bit more, I have a website where there are education material on stress, on anxiety, on depression, eating disorder, and something for parents as well on how to communicate effectively with your teenage kids. And so there are lots of those things that are on there. You can log on to there. It's under the menu of mental health. And you can log on. You can read some of those. And Evelyn has given the introduction this morning that I have designed a number of toolkits as well, because we are actually into the digital age, you know, so I'm just trying to catch up, okay, as a dinosaur with the young people. And the toolkits are actually available on Google Play Store as app, and we're still waiting for it to be approved on the Apple Store. So if there are things that you find that it's helpful, you can log on there on the website. So that is so much for introduction, and the website is healthymindconcepts.com. Now, you have come here today with various needs. I hope that at the end of the sessions, I would be able to cover some of the things here. I would be able to tell you a bit about the physiology of stress. Physiology just means what happens to stress inside our body. It's a medical term. And to examine the symptoms of stress so that when you get a symptom, then you can know, wow, I think that is stress. Because it is very important for us to recognize the symptoms before we can get help. And the third one is to examine the impact of stress on physical and mental health. And the fourth one, of course, is to examine the relationships of stress and mental health problems, and also to outline for you a bit about today's up-to-date treatment for stress or the stress management. So I hope that those five key areas that I'm going to cover with you for the next 60 minutes would meet your needs about coming here today, and you wouldn't go away today and saying, well, I should have stayed home, and rather than waking up at 9 o'clock in the morning to come and listen to this speaker. And for whatever that I am inadequate in covering, I'm sure Dr. Lin Yong would cover me for that. So, can I give you the following statements? A 12-year-old student who is struggling at school is a case that I see. A 17-year-old who is hearing voices when there's no one in the room. Kids from families with problems. A girl who is recently diagnosed to have type 1 diabetes. An adolescent whose mother has chronic ill health. A child from a single-parent household. A quietly spoken teenager who comes from an intact middle-class family. Now, I have outlined for you those seven cases. I'm sure that amongst all of us, we would be well acquainted with one or two of those cases. And the questions that I want to ask you this morning is, what do they have in common? They come from different socioeconomic group, and one or two of those are healthy, one of those of two have physical problems, and one hear voices or what we call schizophrenia, and one is struggling at school. But what do they have in common? Now, I'm not going to give you the answer, and hopefully by the end of the talk, you will be able to identify what it is that they have in common. So, before we can talk about stress, we have to make sure that we have the same language. So the questions that I want to ask you is, what is stress? Have you ever thought about it? Stress is a word that is very commonly used, and yet when we ask the question, what is stress, some of us may not be able to answer the question. I remember when I was at school here, I was actually born in Penang, I was brought up here, and I did part of the education here, and after that I went to Australia, and now I live in Sydney, I practice in Sydney. My maths teacher, when I think I was in Form 1, one day he asked me the question. He said, what is a number? I couldn't answer that. I couldn't answer, what is the definition of a number? There are certain things that we use on a daily basis and we hear people, and yet when we pause and think about it, when someone asks us, what is the meaning of that? We don't know what it is. So this morning, I just want to ask you, what is stress? And perhaps by looking at those six statements, you would have come to a bit of an understanding of what stress is. This homework is too difficult for me. Now, some of the teenagers sitting there might be talking about that, right? Pure maths, physics, Shakespeare. This homework is too difficult for me. My headaches and indigestions are reactions to my home situation. Mom and dad are too tough on me. I don't want to go to school. I'm a head prefect. Any one of you who has been head prefect before? No? Okay, I'm a head prefect. And the other one is, I'm representing my school in badminton, okay? And I'm going to be the next Datuk Lee Chong Wai. I'm representing my school in badminton. I am not stressed. Don't say that I'm stressed. I am not stressed. Now, all those six statements are statements of stress, including the one that says, I am not stressed. So, from those six statements, we can come to the conclusion that really, stress is related to life events. Now, life events means things that are happening to us. Now, life events may not necessarily be negative. There can be positive life events, like I'm representing my school in badminton. I'm the head prefect. And I got straight A's in my exams. Those are life events. Those are very positive. Now, just because they are positive doesn't mean that they are not stressful at all. Because a lot of times when we think about stress, we always think about negative life events like failing an exam and being put into the B class for math and getting 99% rather than out of 100 for our math test and not being popular at school. Now, we think that just because they are negative, then they are stressed. And we forget the other bit, that positive life events can be equally stressful. So, the first thing that we have to grasp is that stress is related to life events. Now, today's topic is about young people. Young people's life is actually full of life events. Every year is different. Every year brings its challenges. And every challenge brings about, right, the chance of success or failure. But nevertheless, every challenge would have to bring about some stress and some adaptation. So the reason why positive life events is equally as stressful is because we have to learn to adapt to the life events. If I'm the head prefect, I got to toe the line. I got to be on a good term with the principal. I have to give speeches during the school assembly. I've got to be the examples for all the kids. If I'm representing my school in badminton, I have to make sure that I'm going to be performing very well. So positive life events require adaptations, just like negative life events. And that is the reason why positive life events are equally stressful as well. So stress is related to life events. And later on, we would find that stress is also related to one's interpretations of the experience. Now, what do I mean by that? When a person is made a head prefect, when a person is made to represent the school in badminton, you would interpret that event as the whole school's expectation is on me. I must not fail. If I'm the head prefect, it's like I am the example for all the kids, and there are 1,500 kids or children, students in the high school here, and I have to be the examples, I have to do everything right. So stress is not only related to what is actually happening to us in terms of our experiences in life, whether it is negative or positive, but stress is also related to how we interpret those life events. So that's the reason why some of us, when we get 65% in our Bahasa Malaysia, then is it Bahasa Malaysia or Bahasa Malaysian? Anyway, so Malaysia, yeah? So we are very happy because there's a credit. But some of us, when we get 65, we are not happy. We interpret that as, well, that is not a distinction. I think a distinction is 75, okay? And some of us, when we get a 75, and we are very happy, but we become unhappy because we know that when we bring our report card back to our parents, then our parents say, what happened to the other 25 marks? I thought that, you know, you're going to be very good and you're going to get a HD. Highly disappointing. No, high distinction. And so our interpretation of our life events is going to be determined whether we are stressed or not. And a lot of times, our interpretations of life events is also influenced by our expectations of how the other people are going to respond to our achievement or not. And that is the reason why a lot of times kids from highly achieved family with parents who are highly qualified professional people, even though the parents say, "Wow, look, you know, we always tell John, don't worry about it. You just have to study, you know, we don't care about your marks, and we just want you to be happy." The parents can say that, but John is not going to think that, because they think that the parents have an unspoken expectation. So even though the parents may say, "We want John to be happy, he just have to study, and we don't care about the marks," but John's interpretation is that my parents care about the marks, so now that I get a bad mark, I am feeling really stressed. So it's very important for us to realize that stress is related to life events, and stress is related to our interpretations of the life events. Now, once we get that right, then we would know that that forms the foundations of stress management, which we are going to do a bit more this afternoon. So let's talk a bit about the physiology of stress, because I know that amongst us, there are many young people who aspire to be doctors and lawyers, but especially doctors, so we have to talk about the physiology. So the physiology of stress. Our body is made in such a way that it is finely tuned balance. Now, we can say nature or God has made us that way, okay? It's a finely tuned balance. Now, there are lots of things in life that we use, equipments that we use are in equilibrium. Now, one of them is the fridge that we have. I think every one of us would have a refrigerator at home, or what we call a fridge, right? A fridge is usually kept at a rather constant temperature that you determine and you put the dial. So when the external weather is a bit hot and it goes into 38 degrees Celsius, the fridge works a lot harder in order to maintain the same temperature. And when externally, when it goes down to 20 degrees, and some of you probably experience 20 degrees at home because your air conditioning is going full blast, okay? And obviously, Malaysia is not a temperate country like Australia. We do drop down to 20, 16, 18. Now, the fridge is not just going to work too hard, because externally, it's actually a lot colder. So stress mechanism in our body is the same. There is an equilibrium of what we call the relaxation response and then the stress response. And it's the imbalance of that which got to do with stress, okay? So hopefully this morning, when you're sitting there, you're going to be rather relaxed, and your relaxation response is kicking in because you're spending a very nice Saturday morning here to listen to a very interesting speaker, and you're going to learn a lot, okay? So hopefully for all of you, the relaxation response is in full working mode. Now, the some of you may be in a stress response, okay? Because you'll be sitting there and wanting to know a bit more about stress, and then you'll be feeling that, well, I know all this thing, and he's not telling me anything useful, and I wasted my Saturday morning. I should have stayed in bed, and I should have gone to visit my favorite hawker store, you know, the char kway teow in Pulau Tikus. Then you'll be all stressed, okay? So we have the stress and the relaxation response, and they are in equilibrium. They have to be kept like a seesaw manner so that we function well. So it's a bit like this. So that is a very important basic concept to grasp, that the stress response and the relaxation response is in balance. So when you are stressed, and I'm stating the obvious, but the obvious is very important to be stated. When you are stressed, you are not relaxed. Good. Very basic, but very important. We got a young person there who got it, okay? And when you are relaxed, you are not stressed, okay? That is the cornerstone of stress management, okay? Apart from stress is related to life events, stress is related to how we interpret our life events. The other one is the equilibrium of the stress and the relaxation response. It's like a seesaw. When one person is up, the other person has to be down. If both people are down, Then the seesaw would snap, and we call that nervous breakdown. So I just want to sort of go through that in a bit more detail for those of you who are actually doing biology in your Form 6, and the question may come out in your next exam in biology, that our body has the parasympathetic nervous system and the sympathetic nervous system. Now, you don't have to take notes for that, okay? And the parasympathetic nervous system basically is in charge of the relaxation response. And the sympathetic nervous system is related to the stress response. Now, I want to tell you a query that I have for a long time, ever since I was a first-day medical student. I can never understand why the sympathetic nervous system is responsible for stress, when stress is something, right? And yet it is related to a very nice word, the sympathetic nervous system, right? Is elicit stress response. So it's not that sympathetic after all, yes. So when we are stressed, then our body reacts in a way, like we have indigestion, sometimes we have diarrhea, then we break down into cold sweats, our heart beats very fast, and our pupils dilate just so that we can see what are the danger, and our muscle is all tense because we get into a flight-fight response that I'm going to talk about. And when we are in a parasympathetic system mode, our heartbeat goes down, and we are very relaxed, our mind is quite clear, our mind is quite still, we consume a lot less oxygen, our respiratory rate, which means our breathing rate, actually goes down. Now, that is the parasympathetic or the relaxation response. And a lot of things that we do in terms of breathing exercises and meditation is in order to elicit that parasympathetic system response. And that is very, very important. But unfortunately, from my experience, 21st century young people do not like to slow down. We live in a very highly sensorial world, and we get bombarded with a lot of things apart from screen and iPhone and Snapchat. And I was told that if you use Facebook, you have to be over 45, so I'm not going to talk about Facebook to young people, okay? And Instagram. And so we get bombarded with all those things, right? We don't slow down. Young people just have lost the art of being quiet, being silent, being slow, and think about just being relaxed. Now, that is a very, very basic skill that our young people need to have. And unfortunately, a lot of you guys, it just doesn't make sense to you, because when you're quiet, you need to take a photo of yourself. Even when you are doing a breathing exercise, you will Snapchat yourself and then send it and say, "See, I'm doing a relaxation thing." So where does the stress actually start then? Now, this is very, very important. The stress actually starts inside your head, okay? The stress actually doesn't start when your mom yells at you or your dad asks you, where is that 100%, okay? The stress actually starts inside your head. Now, this is very, very important. I want to introduce you to your own brain, okay? And some of you have not been introduced to your own brain. And for our purpose this morning, I'm going to give you a few words, okay? So there is a cortex, which is the main thing of analyzing external stimuli, okay? But whatever that is bombarded into our brain is also modified by the other thing called the limbic system, where our memories and our emotions actually comes in. So whatever life experiences that we have, it's not just pure life experiences as externally exist, but is actually interpreted through our memory, okay? And that's the reason why some of us have a fear of darkness. So when you ask the person why you fear darkness, you get 35-year-old people, 40-year-old people who have a fear of darkness, and when you go back, it's because there's a history of trauma. So when the brain perceives that there's darkness, then the limbic system will kick in and then say, this is dangerous. So our experiences is actually modified by our prior memory. And the other one that is very important is what we call the amygdala. It's only a very, very small thing, but the amygdala is in charge of intense negative emotions. So whenever we become angry, whenever we become hyper alert, when we become hostile, our amygdala actually gets into a state of overfiring. And as a result of that, we get really, really tense. Now, it is very important for us to realize that, because again, a lot of the stress management exercises has to do with modifying the bit of what happens inside your brain. Now, unfortunately for all of us, we have no ability to go into our brain to kind of flick it off, okay? So we have no ability to go into our brain to flick off the limbic system and say, okay, this trauma doesn't exist anymore. So we have to work on that. We have no ability to go into our amygdala and switch it off and say, from now on, you don't have to be stressed, you don't have to be angry, you don't have to be upset. All these things has to be modified through effort that we're going to put in terms of stress management. And of course then, as a result of what happened there, there are lots of hormonal changes in our brain. So I'd like to introduce to you our dear friend, adrenaline. Now, what does adrenaline do? Does anyone knows what adrenaline does? Pardon? Adrenaline, yeah. What does it do? Yes, yes. So adrenaline is actually a fight hormone. Adrenaline is an energetic hormone, okay? So when you can't exercise without adrenaline, okay? So if I were to ask you to do what we call aerobic exercises, your adrenaline have to kick in because you need energy. So adrenaline is an energy hormone, okay? Adrenaline is an energy hormone, and when a person is stressed, when a person is upset, when a person is all wound up and tense, there is a lot of adrenaline going on. And that's the reason why when you're stressed, your heartbeat goes up. You can't have a person who is stressed normally, you know, with a heartbeat of like 60, you know, the heartbeat usually goes up. So adrenaline, we all know about that. Now, I just want to introduce you to another dear friend. And you probably doesn't know him, and his name is cortisol. Now, I don't know why I use the word his, okay? It could be her or its name. It's cortisol, C-O-R-T-I-S-O-L. Now, a lot of us know about adrenaline. Very few of us know about cortisol, okay? Cortisol is the other stress hormones. Now, when we are stressed, we need to use energy. And when we have to use energy, our body have to convert our store of energy into sugar. So cortisol does that. But unfortunately, the results of having too much cortisol is that it actually interferes with our thinking. So human being, we are made in such a way that our body follows a certain rhythm. Okay? So in the morning, about 1 hour before you wake up, your body gives you a big shot of adrenaline and a big shot of cortisol, so that when you get out of bed, right, you are fully energetic and confident and full of energy to face the day, because your heartbeat goes up and the cortisol mobilizes a sugar in your body to burn fuel, and you say, wow, it's a great day. Tomorrow is a HSC and I'm going to be okay, and today I'm waking up. Or you wake up in the morning and you say, wow, it's a great day. Today, you know, I have an important job at Intel and I'm going to face my managing director, Dr. Wong. Without that, without the adrenaline and the cortisol, you would more likely to say, well, I just want to go back to bed. I just want to pull the cover over myself and I'm just not going to face the day. We call that depression. So people who are depressed classically, they don't have enough cortisol and adrenaline in the morning. Now, because our body is made in such a way that we cannot constantly burn adrenaline, right? So there is a rhythm. There's a rhythm. So usually, the adrenaline and the cortisol observes a 24-hour sort of rhythm. By about 10 o'clock, by about 11 o'clock, you have very minimal adrenaline, and then you have minimal cortisol. and then you start to yawn, and then you go back, you want to go to bed because you don't have enough blood sugar. And hopefully you go to bed, and then the adrenaline and the cortisol will continue to drop, and then you have a good night rest, and the next morning, 1 hour before the next morning, then it kicks in again. Now, that is the reason why, for those students here, let me give you a word of wisdom, and I experienced that before, okay? It is no good to wake up at 4 a.m. to do your English and your physics and your chemistry assignment, because it's going to take you 2 hours to wake up. I used to do that, okay? And I study very hard, obviously, you can see that, the results of this. And I used to wake up at 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock, and I wish that in those days there was a doctor who would tell me and say, don't do that, you're wasting your time, okay? So you're wasting your time waking up at 3 or 4 o'clock to do your major assignment, to do your work. You think that you're doing well because, you know, you sacrifice, but that is very ineffective time management. So it's better for you to stay up a bit and then to have a good night rest, okay? So there is the chemistry of stress. So, once you understand that, then you can understand the fight flight response or the physical symptoms of stress. Because you imagine a person who is bombarded with adrenaline, a person who is bombarded with cortisol, okay? There's palpitation, which means increased heartbeat, there's shortness of breath, sweatiness, and of course the person feels a bit dizzy sometimes, and there's gastric upset, indigestion, and that's the reason why a lot of kids, before the major exam, they run to the toilet. And there's gastric upset, pins and needles sensation because of the over-breathing, you breathe a bit too much, and there's chest tightness because your muscle get into a very tight situation. And classically, a lot of times when a person have an anxiety attack or what we call panic attack, all right, their chest is so tight that they feel as though they cannot breathe, and commonly they think that they have a heart attack. So it's not uncommon to find these people fronting the A&E department or the accident and emergency and saying, that, oh, I have a heart attack, and the doctor take a history, do an ECG and say, don't worry, you just have a panic attack, okay? But panic attack is actually quite bad. And the muscle tension, and then the feeling of gloom and doom, meaning that something bad is happening to me. And all these are actually driven by the chemical changes in the body. And there's so much adrenaline, there's so much cortisol, that the person just feels, look, you know, it is terrible, and I'm going to die, and something bad is going to happen to me. That's what we call the gloom and doom. Now, if you have one of those symptoms, right, it's very important for you to talk to somebody or to kind of start to take note of your life and say, look, I am stressed, and there is stress symptoms, and what can I do about that? Recognizing the symptoms is very important. So, this is from my original stress toolkit when I was still living in the dark ages of notes and CDs. Okay, now I progress onto apps and a digital form. So I say that stress is a bit like a caveman being chased by a saber-toothed tiger. Okay, so when there's saber-toothed tiger, I think in Malaysia here, you have the Sumatran tiger, right? From Sumatra. So when you front a tiger, there are only three responses, okay? The first one is that you would run, and hopefully you would outrun the tiger, which a lot of us won't. The other one is that you would stay and fight, which you probably would lose unless you have a rifle. Or the third one is that you freeze and get eaten up. So that is the stress response. Okay, now that is a stress response, or what we call the 3F. Now for our young people, it's quite common. There was once I did an exam and I froze. And when you freeze, you literally freeze. Now some of you, if you haven't frozen before, you won't know what it is, okay? When you get into a state of frozenness, you try to get into your brain, and there's nothing there. The light is not on. And then you fumble and look for the light, and you couldn't find it. And then you look at the exam paper, right? It's 2 plus 2. I know 2 plus 2. Now what is it? Is it 3? Is it whatever? Okay? And then you try to look for the answer, and your brain just blank. That is being in a frozen state. Okay? So when you are in a state of stress, you either in a state of fight, or you run away, which is flight, or you get into a state of frozenness, as though you are actually chased by a tiger from Sumatra. So, I talk about our experiences and coping. Now, the way that we cope with experiences in life, or what we call life events, a lot of times has to do with our interpretation of that life events. All right? So it is not just what happens before in our life event that is important, because a lot of times our life events, right, it just get filtered through our brain. That's where our stress starts, as I've shown you before, right? You have a life event, it goes into your cortex, the main bit of your brain, and then it gets modified by the limbic system, right, of your prior life experiences. Now, let me give you an example. In Malaysia, we know that Malaysian kids are very good with maths, right? You do things like applied maths, pure maths. What other maths do you do again? Hey? Additional maths. I haven't come across that one. What do you add on to maths that is additional? Is it? All right. So, I thought applied maths or pure maths is bad enough. So that's additional maths. Yes. So the idea of additional maths is this, right? The idea of additional maths is, seeing that you are so good at maths, we're just going to add on more pressure for you and see whether you are good at maths or not. So that is the definition of additional maths. But anyway, so let's imagine that you go and sit for an additional maths questions, okay? And in the past, when I did part of my high school here, and sometimes the maths paper can be quite predictable, I remember, right? The first question sometimes start with an algebra, the second question start with a trigonometry, okay? And then after a while, you just recognize the pattern. Let's say you go in there to do your additional maths, and then you expected question one to be, let's say, geometry, okay? And that year, you have a new education minister who decided to change things. And so the first question is no longer geometry, it's trigonometry. Okay, I just know all this metry thing, okay, but I forget what they are. So it's trigonometry, okay? And you look at the paper, okay? Now, your expectation is that it's supposed to be geometry, okay? So, when you look at trigonometry, okay, now, even though that could be easy questions that you've come across, that is the event, okay? But you perceive it as something difficult, because when it goes into your brain, right, you expected geometry, and it is trigonometry. So you interpret that and say, wow, that is going to be terrible. Okay? This is not what I have learned, because I have been practicing past exams paper. Alright? Malaysian students are very good in doing past exam papers as well, right? I've been practicing the past exam papers for the last 10 years, and the first question is supposed to be geometry and not trigonometry. So you interpret that, okay, as something extraordinary. And then you get into a stress situation. And because you get into a stress situation, right, your coping mechanism is not going to be positive. And as a result of that, you may not do very well. So when it comes to stress management, the thing that I want to add on is not only to help you with interpretation of life events, but also to strengthen your coping mechanisms. So, when do we become stressed? When do we become stressed? Now, this is real pure additional maths, and it's quite simple, okay? And when we have multiple stresses, make sense? If you have one thing to cope with, you're a bit stressed. If you have two things to cope with, you become a bit more stressed. If you have three things to cope with, you become even more stressed. And then when you have six things to cope with, you may have a nervous breakdown. Now, for that, I'm not too sure why Malaysia, we kind of have high school students having to do 10 subjects, you know? And I just can't understand it.
They love it.
They love it. 14. 14 now. I am so glad that I went to Australia. I probably won't be able to find a place in university, you know, when I continue to study here. Look, I'm serious, I take my hat off to you, young people of Malaysia, right? You study so hard, and I think that's the reason why you are so stressed, okay? 14 subjects is just unheard of, okay? Yes. I was actually brought up in a Chinese school, okay, by the way, when I was in primary school, I did Litek Primary School. It no longer exists because all the good students have gone overseas. Do they still have it? Now, 14 subjects is torturing, okay? I was brought up in a Chinese education system. And after finishing my primary school, I can only come to the conclusion that, and this is just for a joke, okay? Now, this is not a criticism. I think the Chinese educational system is designed to torture their kids. I remember, okay, as a standard one kid, right, barely 7 years old, I was sharing with my extended family, and we have to learn calligraphy, you know, xiao kai, da kai, meaning little words and big words, right? First lesson, xiao kai, small square, 1 cm by 1 cm, okay? And guess what is the word that I have to write, and I have to hand it in the next day? It's not one, it's not eat, one stroke. It's not two stroke, right? It's not run, two stroke. It is I. Now, not only is it I, in those days, I learned what we call 繁体字, okay? I didn't learn 简体字. So the I has a love there, you know, have a heart, okay? And guess what? I was so stressed, okay? I was so stressed, and I cried, you know? A 6.5-year-old, okay? Having to learn that, it's just so ridiculous. But anyway, look, I take my hat off to you young people, 14. So, multiple stresses, stressor for too long, okay? And stressor that is too severe. So in life, there are a number of stresses that are very severe. And all of us will succumb to that. Like, for example, death of a loved one is a very, very high stress. And for those young people in Malaysia, if you come from families where parents are separated and divorced or parents with problems, that is very, very high stress because the family is no longer a symbol of security and a symbol of safety, okay? So stressor that is too high and lower resistance. Classically, we know that a lot of young people, before an exam, they catch cold. Now, so stress is not just a psychological thing, which I'm going to share with you. Stress can affect our physical functioning. And the reason why young people have lower resistance is because it actually affects their immune system. So I have put up this slide with a lot of respect for the young Malaysian youth, okay? And to talk about, in my opinion, why you guys, okay, young people who are sitting here, and for those of us who have kids who are young people, why is it that the Malaysian youth have such high stress? We live in a world with information explosion, right? Everything is available on the fingertip, and that is very stressful. Now, let me give you an example of what I mean by that. Because I was brought up in a Malaysian society, right? When I went to Australia when I migrated. Guess how old I was when I learned about marijuana and cannabis, okay? When I really learned about sex, okay? I was well into my late teens in university. And these days, young people, they learn about all these things. Now, the big deal about knowledge is that when you have a lot of knowledge, you have to learn to cope with it, right? You learn about cannabis, you learn about drugs, illicit drugs, okay? You learn about sexual relationships, and now you have to cope with that. So there's a tremendous amount of information explosion because of the digital age that we live in. And I'm not only talking about Malaysian youth, I'm talking about youth worldwide. There's just too many things that they need to know and that they need to cope with. And that itself is actually quite stressful. And I think the duration of innocence is getting shorter and shorter these days. It's getting shorter and shorter these days for our young people and for the next generation. The complexity of the world, because of the digital age, right? Everything is at the fingertip. There is a fire at Notre Dame, Paris. And the next day you wake up, you hear about that. There's a shooting in New Zealand, Christchurch, in a mosque. And within a few hours, or within minutes, you get to hear about it. You get to see it. Somebody put it on Facebook, or somebody put it on whatever digital media, right? The world is becoming so complex. And as you know, people like to share bad news rather than good news. Most people don't share good news until you are retired, and then you know you get to join one of these WhatsApp group. I'm not into that age yet, but some of my schoolmates have found me out and then say, "Oh, would you like to join us?" You know, and they spread good news. You know, every morning you get something like a GIF. They say, "Good morning, today is a good day. Have your coffee." You know. And sometimes I don't even look at it, right? So you don't do that until, you know, you're kind of near retirement. But the rest of the time, people spread bad news. The world is so much more complex. And of course, there's an erosion of absolute values because everything is questions, all right? There's no such thing as absolute values anymore. Now, values is very important because values help us to measure our behavior, because when we know that there's something absolute, right, we know it. So the 12 inches is 12 inches, okay? We no longer use inches, we use metrics, okay? So 1 meter is 1 meter, right? But when it comes to human values, it fluctuates, okay? So because it fluctuates, kids actually live in a world of uncertainty. And that's the reason why, as you know, I'm a child, adolescent, and family psychiatrist. I always tell the parents of my adolescent patients, right? You have to give the boundary, okay? Because young people need to know the limit where they are. And paradoxically, when people are not given the limits, right, they have to test it out. Can you imagine a world, okay, for those of us who are adults, right? There's no speed limit. There's no speed limit, okay? Now, initially you will say, yes, that is good, all right? I'm not going to get traffic offenses anymore because I can drive at 40 kilometers per hour. I can drive at 120 in the middle of Georgetown down Penang Road, okay? I can speed it up to 200 kilometers per hour. I'm not going to get a traffic ticket, okay? But the fact is that when you don't have limits, it can create a lot of anxiety in you, right? Because when you cross the road, you're not too sure how far that car is going to travel, and if the car hits you, the driver is not in the wrong because there's no speed limit. So to have absolute, to have limitations is very important. And young people who study for 14 subjects, okay, and expected to get 14 straight A's, right? Studies and exams, limited opportunity, right? Limited opportunity. One of the things that I really, because I travel to other bits of the world as well, okay? One of the things that I think Asian countries have to do better is to revamp their education system. Okay? Is to revamp their education system. I feel that really, as far as the maturity of a person is concerned, right, we expect Asian kids, all right, if I can still call them kids, I'm sorry because I'm a bit older, okay? So we expect Asian kids to know what they want to do by the time they're 18 or 17. That is far too young. That is far too young. So I think our education system has to be a bit more flexible so that young people are actually given a lot more opportunity, because some young people, they just don't. Is that okay? Some young people, they just don't mature till they are 19 or 20 or 21. And that is okay. I mean, who knows that by the time you're 17 or 18, you have to commit the next 40 years of your life into a profession. That is rather unrealistic. So limited opportunities where people fail in exams and then they can't come back anymore. So I have to test this now, yes? I think when they are too near to each other, they actually... Okay, so limited opportunity, and of course, family breakdown, okay? Family breakdown, family is breaking down at a very rapid age, and divorce rate is up, okay? The evidence is that the more advanced a society is, as a nation moves from a developing to a developed nation status, marital problems and breakup increases because there's more in the way of individualism. Environmental problems that I talk about and the global problems. So let's do quickly the consequences of stress. The physical consequences, as you can imagine, if there is a lot of adrenaline, then you're going to get all those physical symptoms of high blood pressure, heart disease, and because of the cortisol, okay, your body keeps pumping up too much in the way of sugar, then eventually the person actually get what we call insulin resistance syndrome, and eventually it can go on to diabetes and the decreased immune function, right? And chronic immune function deficiency or a decrease of that would actually make the person more susceptible to cancer. Now, we know that cancer is on the increase on a worldwide basis. And when you talk to people who have cancer, right, a lot of times preceding the diagnosis of the cancer, a lot of them actually have gone through a long period of stress as well. So stress is not just something just mental, it's not just something of an emotional level that, look, you know, I cannot cope, but it actually has far-reaching physical health problem. And of course, the psychiatric, okay? And a lot of the psychiatric illnesses or disorders, right, is because of chronic stress. And for those of you who suffer from anxiety or depression, can I advise you that you need to get your stress management right. Now, for those of us who are actually sitting here, who are healthcare professional or parents, okay, and who have kids with anxiety and depression, right, when the way that we can actually help our children is to get the stress management right, okay, because if your kid who have already a diagnosis of anxiety or depression, if you don't get the stress management right, your kid is more likely to linger in that anxiety and continue in that depressive illness. So stress management is absolutely very important. So what are the telltale signs? The telltale signs, think about adrenaline, think about cortisol, okay? Headache, insomnia, appetite problem, digestive problem, aches and pains of unknown origin. And what are the psychiatric signs, okay? Your kid starts to worry a lot and telling you that I have all this worry in my head I can't get rid of. Anxious feelings, social withdrawal, lack of interest, and not contacting friends, not going out, not joining the family at the dinner table, preferring to isolate himself in the room, and a lack of motivation, okay? You have a kid who previously would apply himself to study and at some point in time doesn't seem to be able to get it right. So when you see one of those things, now this is by no means a foolproof assessment of stress, but if you have a child who has one of those two symptoms, always, always think about stress. The physical as well as the psychological. So I like to put it in that way, the checklist of what I call CAPES or CAPES, right? And when you suspect that your good friend, when you suspect that you yourself, when you suspect that your child, or when you suspect that your students is stressed, go through that checklist. C-A-P-E-S. The first one is cognitive, right? Cognitive means thinking, the thinking process. The person would subjectively talk about the thinking process being a bit slowed down, or the person would talk about the thinking process being a bit jumbled up, or the person would express to you thought content that is a lot more negative, such as worries. The other one is the A, academic, the school efforts and the grades. Now, if you, I'm talking about a deviation from normal, okay? So I'm not talking about a B student who is not an A student. I'm talking about a B student who becomes a C student, or A students become a C students, right? So the deviation, the downward decline, the academic, and the physical, a child who seems to be lethargic, the child who doesn't seem to have energy, and the child who has sleep problems, and a child who has no ability to be involved in a lot of other activities like his or her contemporaries. So, and the emotional, the sadness, the irritability, and the tension. Now at this point, I like to talk a bit more about the irritability. A lot of young people may not come and tell you that I feel sad, but they become a bit irritable, they become a bit angry. And sometimes adults, we say, oh, I don't know why, you know, he's such a nice person, and now he's so irritable. Think of stress. The younger the person is, the less likely the person is going to be able to tell you that I am sad. And then the last one is the social withdrawal and the social isolation. So when you go through those checklists, when there's one area of the child who has a problem, already you got to be suspicious. When there are two or more areas, you got to be highly, highly suspicious, and please get some help. And young person, if you experience that, please talk to your parents and talk to your doctor and somebody who is concerned about you. So how can we help the Malaysian youth? We have to understand the problem. This is where Kiwanis come in, and I'm glad that they are actually promoting this. And I think, as I say before, right, at the end of the day, to be successful is more than just being academic and to get good results. To be successful really, really, really is to have good mental health, because the final analysis is that if you have poor mental health, you're not going to achieve your potential. In my practice in Sydney, I still function as a clinician. I still see some, run a clinic about 3 times a week, and so often, okay, I come across young people who are highly intelligent, who go to selective school, and who just didn't get it right, and who didn't succeed. Normally, what happened to these young people is this: they would be able to get through high school, and they get through the HSC, but once they hit university, they don't survive, and because of poor mental health, and they either drop out, or they keep failing, and then they were asked to stop. And the main reason is not these kids have low IQ. The main reason is not that these young people are not hardworking. The main reason is that their mental health is poor. And as a result, they can't actually achieve their potential. So we have to understand the problem. We have to support the youth, work with the youth. And very important is to understand the youth personality. Can I ask that parents and grandparents here, okay, I always get very worried if you have a young person who is very, very nice, who does everything that you ask, be very, very anxious about that. Because I come across a lot of young people who are pleasing, okay? We call that people pleaser. It's not a bad point, and they just don't want to ruffle the feather, as it were. And they get on with life, and these are the young people who would do things, and the parents and the teachers and the adults around and say, I just don't understand it. He was such a nice person, okay? And that is because the person internalizes the stress. So accept the needs for treatment, which is very important. And parents, we are still in control about our young person's life in terms of life events. So modulate the life events for young people. Stress management skill. Now, I know that our dear Dato know people in high places. So I think Malaysia, okay, and Singapore, we have to look at stress management as a normal curriculum of education. I think it's easy for a half-baked past Malaysian son to come and tell you what to do, okay? Because I don't have the responsibility. But I sincerely believe that. I sincerely believe that stress management should be part of the basic education curriculum, where young people are taught basic skill in recognizing stress, in knowing what stress does to their body, in being able to do the very basic of stress management. And I think if we can achieve that in Malaysia, then we are just going to be able to address at least the endemic problem of stress among young people. And believe me, if we can get to that stage, I'll be very happy to be able to come and work alongside and to contribute what I can, because I am so very, very fervent about this whole thing about young people and stress management. So are we able to make that part of the education curriculum? And we help to improve the problem-solving skill of young people. And importantly is to give young people the permission to fail. And unless they have the permission to fail, they would always be stressed. I think there was a very famous scientist, or was it Einstein, who says that there's no such thing as a failure. There's no such thing as a failure. Only an opportunity to try again. Think about that. There's no such thing as a failure, only an opportunity to try again. If Einstein didn't say that, I said that this morning. And we have to teach our young people to express emotions. So, I like to end. Oops. I'd like to end with, because the Datuk say that they wanted to have some case, okay? I'd like to end with this so that you can mull over your morning tea and be stressed about this. What will you do for Emma? What will you do for Emma? And this is a case that I dealt with 2 weeks ago. 16-year-old girls come from a nuclear family who has a brother who has anxiety problems. Have friendship problems at school, which is not atypical of 16-year-old, right? Quiet and soft-spoken type. She's not sleeping well. She say, look, you know, dog, I'm not sleeping well. It takes me about 2 hours to fall asleep. And Emma avoids going to youth group in the local church. Previously, she was very, very active there before. And her grades was dropping. She was a very good student before, and now she can't even complete her assignments. And she has experienced a few panic attacks I mentioned to you about at school. And now she's fearful of going to school. So what will you do for her? So maybe we can use this as a case study later on in our workshop after lunch. So thank you very much for the opportunity to share this morning with you.